Oh, this is perfect. Can I give that to you to pass around everyone? This is exactly what we're talking about today. What happens when your heart gets broken into many millions of fragments that hurt and jagged edges? Great. Oh, good. Okay, thank you. Thanks for coming. It is exciting to be here. I'm really delighted. I'm actually just back from a long trip away in Europe, and I'm so honored that Lindsay invited me to do this because it feels like a coming home. And it's so nice to have Sophie here, because Sophie's and I have been travelers in the Vedas for years together, right? And but then there's lots of new faces. And so, but it's just really wonderful to be back in the place of what I feel like is the open heart. Because I feel like those of us who are seekers, you know, we are seeking to share and be together in the field of the heart, right? Would you say? Is that true? Okay. So again, I'm Laura, and I'll tell you a little bit about me, and then I would like to just get a sentence or two from you to give you a sense of what we're going to do today. I thought we were going to be in a yoga studio on mats, sitting on the ground. So so I don't really like this divide between us. Let's pretend it isn't there, but hopefully it facilitates listening and sharing. At some point, I would like to do a little bit of chair yoga. And we will be doing some meditations and some exercises. Okay, so it's not just going to be 3 hours of me talking. Thank goodness. But I'd like to start with a little moment to close our eyes, to go inward, and then to do a mantra together to set our intention and to set our joined vibration, okay, to really bring ourselves into the heart space. So with your eyes closed, I want to first invite you to simply notice yourself breathing, noticing yourself as a living organism that arises from nature, to feel each breath as a gentle breeze that blows through the landscape of beauty and aliveness. With each breath, breathing in and breathing out, let yourself feel that you are beauty itself, that you're a field of consciousness, and in that field of consciousness there's radiance, there's a fragrance, rose or lavender, something beautiful. There's creation, a river, a lake, an ocean, grasses, trees, flowers, birds singing, butterflies dancing, your favorite animal playing. And each breath of yours is a gentle breeze that flows through all of this, spreading the seeds of life, sending aromas and perfumes from one flower to another. And this gentle breeze and breath dances and flows through it all, each breath reminding you of your aliveness, reminding you that you are more than what you woke up thinking about today and what you'll go to bed tonight thinking about. You are more than the things we'll talk about today. You're more than your karma. You're more than your problems. You're more than your burdens. You're even more than your triumphs. You're more than your successes. You're more than all the ways in which you love. You are this radiance and this beauty, this breath, this aliveness. You are this field of consciousness where all life plays, connects, creates. As you inhale, you can silently say to yourself, Om, the sound vibration of all existence. Om. 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 Om is a unifying force of creation, where there's no karma, no problems, no limitations, there is only Om. An infinite vast field in which we can play, create, live, perceive, connect, and know. Om as you breathe in. Hrim, H-R-E-E-M, Hrim, as you breathe out. Om and Hrim. Hrim is the sound vibration of the morning sun, the light coming up over the horizon, bringing the power to create a day. Hrim is the divine feminine, the goddess, the Devi, in her infinite powers, beauty and grace, to bring all things alive. Om. Hrim. Good. And then together we're going to do a mantra. Om Shri Ganesha, Ganesha Sharanam. Okay, can you repeat that? So you can open your eyes if you want. Or you can keep them closed if you want. Om Shri Ganesha, Ganesha Sharanam. Om Shri Ganesha, Ganesha Sharanam. Okay, so I'll say it and then you repeat it. Got it? Om Shri Ganesha,
Om Shri Ganesha,
Ganesha Sharanam.
Ganesha
Sharanam. S-H-A-R-A-N-A-M, Sharanam. So Ganesha is that which helps us with our karma. And Sharanam means to take refuge. I take refuge in the divine intelligence that governs existence. And I ask that that divine intelligence that governs all existence align me so perfectly that there is only alignment. There's no friction. There's no interruption. There's no disruption. There's only all-knowing, all-loving, wholeness and ease. Om Shri Ganesha, Ganesha Sharanam. Okay? So we'll do it together now, and we're going to do it 8 times. Ready? So you'll do it with me. Om Shri Ganesha, Ganesha Sharanam. Good. Om Shri Ganesha, Ganesha Sharanam. 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 Last one. Om Shri Ganesha, Ganesha Sharanam. Beautiful. Namaste, Loka Samasta, Sukhino Bhavantu. May our time together be beneficial to ourselves, to our loved ones, and to all beings everywhere. May the work that we do, may the yoga that we do, serve to uplift all humanity, and may it bring peace, light, love, joy to the world. Beautiful. Okay, thank you. Thank you for coming. So now it's your turn. Well, I'll tell you a little bit about me. My name is Laura. I'm spending autumn in Europe and spring in India and winter here in California between the north and the south, and summer is between here and my family home. Thank you. in the Chicago area. So a pattern has emerged, but because of karma in my life, everything blew up, and I'm really excited to talk to you about that and how things blow up and why things blow up and how those are wonderful opportunities. And that karma is dharma as much as dharma is karma. So somebody wrote to me and said, are you going to record this? Because I live in Michigan and my wife and I would really like to come, but we can't be there this weekend. And anyway, he said something like, I don't know, he said something about, and aren't they really different subjects? And so I was really glad that he said it, because I think we think of karma and dharma as really different subjects. And I think of karma as like all the problems and dharma as all the good stuff, right? But really, I think they're the inside out of the other. And I think it's through our karma that we find our dharma. But even as we face our dharma and we live our dharma, we're still going to find our karmas. Ha! So we'll get, by the end of today, you'll know what I mean. So the class is informed by deep and, I think it's about, almost a 40-year journey into yoga and meditation and Ayurveda more recently, but I've been practicing Ayurveda for about 12 years now and Jyotish for about 10. And Jyotish is a word that means light. Ish means divine, so it means the knowing that you are divine light and that the light of you, the consciousness of you, the soul in you, is one with consciousness itself, and it chose to come alive in this human existence, this time, and to experience everything that you've been experiencing. So when you have a Jyotish reading, when you learn about your Jyotish chart, which is based on your birth time, date, and place, you get to know yourself as a soul that made these choices that often seem invisible or even hard to understand. Like, why would I ever have chosen that, right? But we choose these things in order that the soul can expand. And so much of what we're choosing, even though it's hard and it seems impossible and sometimes it really feels like it's going to kill us, so much of that is chosen because your soul has come alive in this life for one reason, and it's so kind of boring that we don't talk about it that much, but you've come alive just to have experience. You're really just alive to experience things. And in a way, that's your dharma. That's where your dharma is. Your dharma is to have an experience of love or light or beauty or joy or pain. And in the pain, to be able to help others understand why they're experiencing pain, right? So dharma is where the things that we experience feel good and feel like they're in service. Karma is where the things that we're here to experience don't feel so good, but still might be turned towards service. You see how they're the same, really? And if you didn't have a nervous system, you might not be selective. You might not say that feels good or that doesn't feel good. You just say that is, right? That's what it is to be in the field of consciousness. It just is. There's a butterfly that's blue and a butterfly that's yellow and a butterfly that's brown, and either one's good or bad. They're all butterflies, right? So really what yoga is teaching us is to really access that place where everything is neutral. And in a way, that's kind of boring. I mean, we can have this exalted feeling sometimes through yoga practice. And in a way, what the yogis are saying is even that exaltation is not the final point. It's the juice that keeps us going. But the final point is just neutrality. It's karma or it's dharma. It's painful or it's pleasurable. It's an experience that's helping me expand into a wider and wider and wider sense of what it means to be alive. And even though in your life you've always done things that are good, you're still going to have experiences that come to you that aren't good and that you don't deserve. I think that's another way we could define karma. It's those things that you don't feel like you deserve. You did everything right, but that still happened. You went to therapy, you did the yoga, you've done the meditations for 15 years or 20 years or 30 years, and yet, still those loops. Why is this happening again? Why does this keep happening? And if we were able to say, this keeps happening because my soul wants me to know what that feels like, then we might embrace it more. It might still hurt, but we'd feel a master. We are a master. And so we're not inside the pain or smaller than the pain, it still is consuming, but we're bigger than the pain. And that's really what I hope we'll all get by the end of today. Does that sound good? Okay, good. So it's very much a talk today that's informed by Jyotish. Jyotish is said to be the science of karma, the science of timing. Whenever you give a soul consciousness to the time-space continuum, which is what this is, then it is going to come alive in a chronological order, because that's how time happens. All of your intentions and your hopes and dreams can't all happen at once. It'd be confusing. We wouldn't be able to do that. So you give human existence, put us in this field that we're in now, this earthly existence. And in the time-space continuum, we are here unfolding our karmas and our dharmas. And the Jyotish that I practice and that I work a lot with clients on, is to really understand those karmas and those dharmas, to understand what you're unfolding, when, why, how, what is the timing of those things. So I think that it gives an insight that we don't always get in yoga, even though Jyotish is said to be an Upaveda, meaning a supporting science, to the prime Veda, which is yoga. Veda is a word that means knowledge or science, right? And yoga is said to be the prime Veda, the prime science. And what is yoga? Do you think that the ancient yogis sitting in caves sat around and said, one day, what we're doing now will flow down this river Ganges and go all the way to the ocean of the Pacific. And people standing on the ocean of the Pacific, living on the ocean of the Pacific, will get together in classes and they'll sweat and they'll stretch and they'll do yoga practices and we'll really have fulfilled our mission. Do you think that was what their mission was? No. What was their mission? What were they experiencing themselves and what were they hoping to share with others? Divine connection. Okay. That's a good answer. All your answers are going to be good, so let's go ahead and hear them. Let's share. What's in your heart? What do you think yoga is about? Enlightenment. Okay. Peace.
Presence.
What's that?
Being present.
Being present.
That we're all one.
That we're all one. And these are great words. It's interesting to think like, I think, what is divine connection? What is enlightenment? Like, what are these words? What do they mean? And really what they are is a pointer. They're words that point us towards an experience, right? A sensation. And if we're able to have that experience and that sensation, it's because it's possible within us. And they were able to say, well, those are the best of our experiences. Those are the best of our sensations. How can we sustain that? How can we get that more and sustain that longer, right? And we have them in other ways. You know, I just finished a book and I just loaded it last night. And I was cooking yesterday because it's a book about Ayurvedic cooking. And I was finishing recipe testing that a girlfriend of mine helped me with. And while I was in the kitchen, I was feeling so connected to this friend of mine who was saying, well, I took your recipe, Laura, and I modified it in this way, and then I took it back from her, and I modified it in such a way, and there I was all alone in my kitchen. But I felt so connected to her, and I wrote her today, and I said, I felt like you and I were together in the field of consciousness, like in our source, right? Because what is our source but creative intelligence and oneness? And so we were creating together, sort of without words and a little bit long distance, but there was creativity and there was connection. And I think the yogis wanted that. And so really yoga could be being in the kitchen making a healthy meal. It can be painting. It can be with friends going to do something together, right? So yoga is said to be the prime Veda. The purpose of our life, the true dharma of our life, you could say, like we don't even have to come back tomorrow. Because yogis were saying, the purpose of your life is to realize yourself, to realize the truth of who you are. One thing that happened when I was in India, the first time I went, and this is probably in a nutshell why I fell in love with India. Not because it's source of yoga or all of that. not because of the Himalayas, not because of the Ganges, but because I was sitting one day with a monk who had come to teach at this conference. We were having lunch together. And he was so friendly and so sweet and so wise. And he said, oh yeah, I was an organic chemist. I used to live in Delhi, which I couldn't imagine because he's in robes, he's roly-poly. He just looks like the Buddhist monk you want to take home with you, right? You want to meditate with him. You want to learn everything you can from him. You can't imagine that he was once like us. You know, he once had a job, he once commuted to work, he once had stress, he once had to figure out how to feed himself. He was hungry. He had a job and a boss who maybe people had issues with. So he said, yeah, I was an organic chemist. Wow, I said, tell me about that. He said, well, first I was studying physics, but as a student, I excelled in physics, but I never found what I was looking for, which is the underlying nature of reality. So I switched to organic chemistry. I was like, oh, that makes sense. I studied English literature, you know. But he's looking for the nature of reality in science. So instead of physics, right, the great flow of all that is and how things move, it's, let's see if I can examine like little molecules and chemicals and interactions. And I said, well, how'd that go? He said, I didn't find it there either. And so I became a monk. And then, of course, the natural question is, and how did that go? And he said, well, I'm here, aren't I? And he was here at this conference teaching because he wanted to share with others what he had learned about the nature of reality. So, you see, through science, through literature, through art, through cooking, we're all seeking an experience of ourselves, that experience that makes us feel truly alive, that validates who we are, that I am alive, I'm breathing in, I'm breathing out. Anything that we do, even our indulgences, our addictions, we're seeking a greater, deeper, more enlivened sense of feeling alive, right? We feel alive. People do stupid things just to feel alive, right? And we're seeking also to know, to connect to that all-knowing field of consciousness, where we're not confused, we're not figuring out, what am I going to do with my life? What is my dharma? I don't know, why is this happening? Is this the right person for me? We're seeking to be in that state where we feel we have all the answers. We don't feel separate from knowledge. Our body itself is an all-knowing field. To be sick, Ayurveda says, is to have a break from the all-knowing field. Your body knows how to heal itself. That's knowing. And so we want to always be in that field of knowing, knowing how to feed ourselves, how to heal ourselves, as well as the big things like what job, what person, etc. Right? Does that make sense? And then we're also seeking love. Right? What's the greatest experience of being alive? Why are we always talking about it? I asked Lindsay how she's doing. She's like, uh-huh. And she starts telling me about somebody. And I was like, I'm thinking to myself, all I ask is how you're doing. But that's what we're thinking about, right? That's what we're feeling about. Teachers get to be exposed. So what do we call that in yoga? The desire to know our aliveness, the desire to know our intelligence or consciousness or knowingness, and the desire to know our connection, our love, the feeling of good. There's a word that we use a lot in yoga, the threefold nature of the soul. There's your clue. Sophie's like, Sophie's squinting her eyes to peer into my mind to think, what is she talking about? And you probably know, right? Of course. So in all of the wisdom sciences and all of the Vedic sciences, everything boils down to three. Keep that in mind, because it's like the secret to knowing everything. You don't have to memorize anything once you know this. Everything boils down to the threefold nature of reality. And the threefold nature of reality the yogis used to say, they tell us, Sat, Chit, Ananda. Right? That's who we are in our essence. We are Sat, Chit, Ananda. So yoga is the prime Veda, the prime science, the prime body of knowledge that's saying the purpose of your life is to know who you are. That's it. You're Sat, Chit, Ananda. You can go home. You don't need to do any more yoga. But the thing is, they're not trying to teach you that intellectually. They want you to know that in a feeling sensation. So for a while, I couldn't go to sleep at night I just couldn't go to sleep at night. So what I did to help myself go to sleep at night was I turned on my phone and I would listen to a guy called Guy Raz, which I love that name, Guy Raz. And Guy Raz does the NPR weekend TED Talks. So he takes great TED Talks and he mixes them together according to themes. And they're really wonderful if you ever want to listen to them. And sometimes he'll do a one-hour NPR TED, whatever, the TED Hour, and you'll be like jumping. I think, how can I go to sleep to this? You're jumping out of bed and doing jumping jacks because you're thinking, that's yoga. You know, it's like, wow. And it gives you goosebumps because you're realizing that scientists nowadays, organic chemists and physicists, who are also seeking the nature of reality, are coming to the same conclusions. So guess what? There's this woman in New York who is really radical, and she's a psychologist, but she's like a psychiatric scientist, and she does experiments. She's a researcher. And she actually has come to the conclusion that there is no such thing as emotion. And this is really cool because I went to school in Florence, Italy, when I was 19. And I remember thinking that by learning, you guys know this, my French friends know this, by learning Italian, which is my first foreign language, I felt like I expanded what I was, like my perception. Because now I had a language to describe something new. Or now I had people pointing to something because it's in their culture and their culture is encoded in that language. So all of a sudden you're like, an Italian person says that to something to you and you're like, what does that mean? And it's idiomatic. And they explain to you what it means and you're like, I don't think we have anything like that in the English language. So you got to open up and start to experience something new. Has that ever happened to you in English where you're like, wow, I never knew that feeling existed or that concept existed because that culture has it and our culture never had it. Do you know what I mean by that? You have a whole new experience of something. The older we get, the less it happens. And that's the problem with getting old. And that's what every scientist is saying about how we need to learn new things. We need to keep feeding our brain, expanding our brain, because we need to keep having bigger and bigger experiences. And one of the best ways to do it, right, is to learn something new. And one of the best ways you can do that is go to a new country or learn a new language or, you know, do a yoga teacher training. Right? Yeah. So this woman says, go to a different country and they have different emotions. Really, they have different emotions. And they have different emotions that they think are normal. And what she actually comes to say is, our culture teaches children to have those emotions. Taking a 5-year-old, 6-year-old to school for the first time, are you nervous? Are you scared? Are you excited? The child doesn't know what those words are. The child maybe knows a feeling, and maybe they have butterflies, but we've not told them what to feel. We don't know we're doing it. We're feeling that way ourselves, but we're teaching people, right? You broke up with somebody. The first time you break up with somebody, are you brokenhearted? Maybe not. Maybe you're just normal. Or maybe you have sensations and you don't know what they are, and we don't have words for them. What she concludes is, and it's a beautiful talk, which I really highly recommend listening to, and we'll send, I'm going to put everything up on a website. Afterwards, there's going to be notes. So all of this is going to be there for you to see, and then this video is going to be available for you all afterwards. So I'll also attach this talk because it's so brilliant. The woman says, there's nothing but sensation. So you have an experience, which we'll call stimulus, and then you have a sensation, which we're going to call response. That's all you have. Now, that's what yoga teaches. This is the essence of what yoga teaches. This is the essence of yogic therapy or Vedic therapy. Working with people to notice their responses and to feel. right? Because that's why we have a nervous system, so that we'll feel it. We've got a nervous system on purpose, which means everything we feel must be on purpose, even those really horrible things. Must be on purpose. So there you could say the Dharma is to feel. The Dharma is to have the karma that makes you feel, right? They're not really separate things. Your purpose is to know the truth of who you are. And who you are is Satchitananda alive in a human body with a nervous system that's going to feel things and really feel things. And if we are ever using yoga to stop feeling things, we are hypocrites and we are liars. So let's not do that. Because the greatest thing we can ever get from yoga is to feel. And I remember not too long ago when I had this really devastating karmic thing happen, and I felt like I was being called by the outside world to do things in a perfect way. And I said to myself and anybody who wanted to ask, the only commitment I have as a yoga teacher and a yogi is to really experience this and to feel it fully. And that's what I'm going to do. And that might mean getting on the mat or not getting on the mat. I didn't even feel like my responsibility at that time was to get on the mat every day. My responsibility, your responsibility, is to experience what you're experiencing as fully as you can. Taste a strawberry, smell a rose, laugh with a child, be fully present, right? Be fully present. So this woman says, all we've got is sensations. And she then goes on to say, we've only got 4 sensations. It's so cool. It's like strip out the cultural layers and already you feel so free. Wow, I don't have to feel sad, mad, grief. I don't even have to feel joy or happy because I live in California, which is such a beautiful place to live. I can feel 1 of 4 sensations. That's all I ever have to feel. And the sensations are pleasant and unpleasant. Stimulated or calm. And then variations. So those things might get together in what we call them Jyotish yogas. When things get together, we call them yogas. When planets get together, they're yogas. So combinations are called yogas. So you might be feeling pleasant and stimulated, or you might be feeling unpleasant and stimulated, really triggered, right? Or you might be feeling calm, pleasant, right? Make sense? So that's all that we're ever feeling. So I want to do an experiment, and I want to just do a noticing experiment, okay? Just to notice that, you know, Rumi says, out beyond the field of right doing and wrongdoing, right? Out beyond right doing and wrongdoing, there's a field, and I'll meet you there. So that field out there is actually in here. So we're going to go in here to that field out beyond right doing and wrongdoing. And see if we can notice sensation, okay? And then when we come out of it, I'm going to invite some sharing. And we'll exchange names and things then, okay? Sound good? So you don't have to do anything. You can just get comfortable and close your eyes. Good. And then, again, I want to invite you to notice your breath. Notice as you breathe in and breathe out what that breath is like. So let's imagine that you're going to have to spend 5 minutes, which is a lot of time, telling a group of people, really smart people who are going to listen to your every word, you're going to want to tell them what this next breath is like. Temperature, pace, volume, where you feel it, how it moves, where it comes from, where it goes. And then you're going to tell them the sensation that comes to you from the breath. what sensation arises or what sensation you notice. Pleasant, unpleasant, stimulating or arousal, calm. Om Shri Ganesha, Ganesha Sharanam. Okay. So when I do the mantra, Om Shri Ganesha, Ganesha Sharanam, that'll be our cue that you can come back when you're ready. So, darling and Tyler, what did you feel? One of the four sensations.
Pleasant.
Pleasant. Thank you. So we're going to go around, and you can each say your name, and then what it felt like. And calm, thank you.
Sandra, pleasant and calm.
Okay, good. Sandra, pleasant and calm.
Jane, the same.
Jane, the same, pleasant and calm. Annie?
Annie, shallow.
Shallow, thank you. Breath was shallow. Where shall we go next, Lindsay?
Lindsay, pleasant, calm, but like a little bit excited.
A little bit of stimulation. Good. That's pretty normal for you? Okay, good. That's nice. Yes. Okay, good. Pleasant, unpleasant, fine, and calm. Ananda stimulated. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Good. Thank you. So how was that exercise? Make sense? Okay. So that's when we're working with the breath. And one of the reasons that we work with the breath is because, A, it's our life force, and it's great to remember that we're alive. And B, it's not something tangible, so it's great to remember that what we are is not the limitations of things that we can touch or hold, but something that flows and helps us come back to flow. The other reason is because it's simple. It's easily accessible. Now we're going to do something that's like step two, okay, more advanced. Again, when I do the Ganesh mantra, that's just a little cue that you can come back in your own good time. We're going to go back and do the same thing. This time we're going to see if we can just amp it up a bit, okay? No right, no wrong. Go ahead and close the eyes. And first, just let yourself drop into yourself, feeling yourself. Body, your breath, your heartbeat, your own, enlivened self, your own presence, your own ground of being, your own nature. Then I want to invite you to remember something that happened recently that gave you an emotional charge. Maybe you were in, it was a confrontation with someone or a difficult conversation. Maybe someone treated you in a way that was not respectful or didn't feel good. Maybe you had an experience where you felt you disappointed or you didn't live up to your own expectation. Think of a time recently when you felt emotionally charged. And let yourself really recall not only the experience, but the feelings that you had. Allow yourself to really feel those feelings. Just right here now, letting yourself feel ashamed, disappointed, angry, sad, whatever it was. Let yourself feel the feeling and be really present right now to the feeling. And then allow yourself to notice that that feeling is somewhere in your body. Bring your awareness to the place where you feel that feeling in your body. So the feeling is an energy. Allow yourself to notice the energy of that feeling in your body. Notice where it is. Notice the space it occupies. Notice the temperature. Notice where it expands, where it flows, where it compresses. Notice where it begins, where it ends. Notice the core, notice the edges. Allow yourself to notice. Maybe it's got a color. So let's go right into the energy of the feeling right now. No longer paying any attention to the story. Just noticing the sensation, the energy of that feeling that is in your body. And then finding the core of it. Now diving into the center or the core or the most intense part of it. Dive into that and just observe it. Diving into the core of the energy of this feeling, the sensation in your body. Noticing that sensation, noticing whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, arousing or calm. Noticing it and going deeper into it. So there are noises around us and distractions, and the experience itself might be distracting. Try to stay with the feeling, the energy of the feeling, diving deeper and deeper into the core of the energy. And as it allows you, going even deeper into it. And as you dive deeper and deeper into the core of the energy of that feeling, ask feeling, sensation, energy, what is it that you would like me to know about this? What is it that you would like me to know? Is there any wisdom that you have for me? Ganesha, Ganesha Sharanam. Om Shri Ganesha, Ganesha Sharanam. Good. How was that? Okay. So, what's that? A good experience? It was an experience. It was an experience, okay? Did anybody have the sensation of pleasant? No. Yes? It was unpleasant. Did anybody else have that feeling that Sophie had? Unpleasant sensation. Okay. Did anybody have a sensation of arousal, stimulation? Yeah. Anyone have a feeling of calm? No. Yes? What's that, at the end? At the end. Did anybody have that, where it changed? Okay. Would anybody like to share that? That process, what happened? Somebody who had that experience where it went from maybe arousal to calm? Yeah. It was a little ball of warmth?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. And do you mind sharing what happened when you asked if there was any wisdom there for you?
The wisdom that I received is kids are ignorant and they just need to learn, so I'm here to help.
The last line you said, starting with kids are ignorant.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just here to help teach them.
You're here to help teach them. Okay, and how does that feel? What's the sensation that arises when you feel kids are ignorant? I'm just here to teach them. What is the sensation when you feel that, when you just have that recognition?
Calm.
Calm.
Warmth.
Warmth. Calm and warmth. Okay. Does anybody see what just happened there in terms of what the subject of today and tomorrow are about? We've just experienced a karmic pattern, something that is challenging for you, that causes arousal and unpleasant feelings, and maybe has happened more than once. But on the other side of it, you found your dharma. That's a dharma, to teach, to help them be better humans, to help them grow up well. In the understanding of talk about sattva, rajas, tamas? Do people know what sattva, rajas, tamas knows what is? So the gunas. In nature, let's look at a tree, a fruit tree. It's growing, and then the fruit is ripe, and then the fruit decomposes. And we are all cycling. Nature's always doing that. We're all always doing that. So we're either growing, or we're perfectly ripe, or we're decomposing. But what that means is we're either very stimulated, or we're very much at peace, balance, clarity, light, or we're feeling lazy or tamasic or ignorant. And what you're saying is that your purpose is to take people from tamas to sattva. And that's enlightened work. That's a great dharma. Now that might be a singular narrow dharma, like just for those three kids, or however many there are. But it also might be a little bit more expansive, or it might expand as you move on in life. You might be somebody who helps others learn how to help raise kids from ignorance, from tamas to sattva. Or you might bring that out into the world and do that as a coach, or a writer, or a yoga teacher. Who knows? Because the field is infinite, right? But it doesn't matter, really. What matters is that you have the essence of it, the essence of it. And you did that by going inward and being present, not to the emotion and not to the story, but to the sensation. And what you found there is you're bigger than the sensation, and that inside the sensation is your greatest purpose. At least for that. That's karma and dharma right there. But the only way that you can resolve the karma and get the wisdom of the dharma was to go, I'm just going to see what happens if I feel this. Not figure it out. Not go back to school and get a PhD in it. Not do a teacher training even. But sit for how long were we sitting doing that? I don't think it was even 5 minutes. And in 5 minutes, karma and dharma. And if you wanted to, you could take another 5 minutes and write it down or paint a painting or draw a yantra or call someone or text somebody or jump up and down and say, I really want to embody this. I want to embed this. I'm going to do what I do, whatever it is that we do, that helps me really embed this so I never forget. So I always remember, never forget. One of my teachers used to say, do whatever it takes to remember and do whatever it takes to never forget that you are a divine being. Always remember, never forget. Always remember, never forget. Mantra is that. Always remember, never forget. So wow, we could have the mantra. Kids are kids. I am here to teach. That's beautiful. Thank you for that beautiful dharma. Thank you. Anyone else want to share? Is that a smile of wanting to share, or is that a smile of...
I kind of followed the same thing that Betsy did. It's starting out as a lot of anxiety, a lot of pressure in my stomach, realizing what it is, and then at the very end, what I came out of it was, I cannot predict the future, I've got to let it unfold.
Mm.
And then it was just calm. It's out of my hands, and I can't make something out of it. It just needs to be what it is.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I was like, are we going to get an exhale here? Yeah. That's nice. You're like very consciously letting that go. Beautiful. It's a hard one. And I don't know what you're experiencing, but sometimes when we're having to let something go and just let it be, we're talking about like life or death. You know, how about the five kleshas? Yoga Sutras, right? Like, what are the things that cause us to forget who we are? Do you know what are the things that cause us to forget who we are, according to the Yoga Sutras? Yeah? You don't have to say them in Sanskrit. How about I make it easy on you? First one actually is in Sanskrit, asmita. The first cause of suffering, these are the cause of suffering. The other title for this workshop today, what is karma? Why do we suffer? Right? Because really that's what karma is, the cause of suffering. Why do we have to suffer? Like, about 2 weeks ago I was like, well, if... I know I don't really usually do this because I don't really have this sense of like, you know how when we're kids, if I were the king of the world. But I had this moment where I was like, you know, if we were the king or queen of the world, we would eliminate suffering. So if there is an all-knowing, all-intelligent, all-creative power, why is there suffering? Like, who would create that, right? So there has to be a reason for it. There has to be. Has to be. And we, in our job as yogis, is to find what it is. But here's the mind-blowing thing. I hope it's mind-blasting about karma. People will often use that term like, oh, it's my karma. Or, I don't know about you, I bet everybody's had this experience. How many people have had this experience where you've gone through a difficult situation and there's been at least one person in your life who's been like, how did you create that? What did you do to create that? What's your karma? Have you ever had that experience? Yeah? No one else has had that experience, just you and me, Lindsay. It's a great a great writer who ended up having cancer, and she, because she's so bright and such a great writer, she got cancer and she did pass away from it, and she wrote about, like, she wrote so beautifully about this. She said, when somebody has cancer, it's really not very nice to go to them and say, what did you do to create your cancer?
Yeah.
Like, even if you saw somebody smoking 5 packs of cigarette every day, you're not going to go and say, you know, you did smoke. You knew you were going to get it. Sorry that you got cancer, but you smoked. You know, in a person's suffering, but that's what people do with karma. We do that. We say, oh, it's their karma. And I think that's a way of letting ourselves off the hook. It's their karma. I'm not going to get it. Doesn't touch me. It's a little bit like creating a distance between us and the other person. Because in many ways, the hardest thing is to go inside their suffering with them. It's bad enough to have to suffer ourselves. And we don't know how to suffer. We don't know what they're feeling. I don't know what somebody with cancer is feeling. I don't know. So how do I be with them? Right? How do I be with anyone? I've had heartbreak. But if Sandra right now said, I've just had the worst heartbreak of my life, I still don't know what she's feeling. Right? And frankly, she's only feeling 4 sensations, but am I going to say, don't worry, it's just 4 sensations. Emotion's not really real anyway. No, you're denying what the person's feeling, right? And when you deny what a person feels, you're denying their life. Because if you have a nervous system, you're feeling. If you're alive, you're having feelings. We're having them all the time. And that is why we're alive. So when we deny that, we're denying their intelligence, we're denying their breath, we're denying their everything. And what we could do instead is go, how's that feel? Do you feel like sharing with me what that feels like? Like, how can I be present to you, present to what you're going through? Because even if a person smoked 5 packs of cigarettes a day, there's probably a reason they smoke 5 packs. Maybe they're suffering there. Or maybe there isn't suffering that caused them to do it, but suffering that arises from doing it. I don't know. We don't know. Who are we? You know? And if we were God, and if we were enlightened beings, and if we were great masters, we still wouldn't blame another person, which is what it is to say, it's your karma. That's blaming. And blaming and shaming, we're done with that, right? People are rising up, and I mean, collectively, we're so done with that. It's so beautiful to see how people are saying, we are done with that, right?
Do you think that there's much of a difference between blaming and shaming someone and the act of deciding what they deserve? Because I love this analogy, and I've heard it said before, that even if someone smokes 5 packs of cigarettes a day, no one deserves cancer. Hmm. So I feel like it's kind of taking it even a step further than blaming and shaming, and actually kind of like deciding, you know, what someone deserves, you know, whatever they're dealing with. I mean, is it the same?
It's all in the mix of why were we doing that?
Yeah.
And if you think about it, a lot of times I think what we're doing is we're creating distance between ourselves and that thing that they're experiencing. Because we don't want to experience it ourselves. We don't want to get cancer. Oh, that's why they have cancer. I don't do that. I probably won't. A lot of times that's what we're doing, right? When I think what we're alive to do is to be present, to be wise, and to be compassionate. And I think that's what yoga's goal is. Because presence, wisdom, and compassion is the exalted, cultivated expression of Satchitananda. When you know who you are and you spend every day checking in with who you are, I am pure being, pure consciousness, pure bliss, the more you connect to that, the more the pure being that you are helps you just be present. And the more you connect to the chit, the consciousness that you are, the more that helps you be wise. Wisdom flows from that. You meditate every day, and before you know it, you've got all these great ideas. You have the wisdom to live your life accordingly. And then the more you connect to yourself, the more you sit in meditation or you do your yoga or mantra, the more you have a feeling of contentedness, the ananda piece. Right? So once we feel that, we feel contentedness, we feel an ananda piece, we feel love. Love flows from that, and compassion is just another word for love. It's the love for another. It's the capacity to be in their shoes and hold them even as they suffer, even as they rage, even as they're ignorant, even as they're dying of cancer because they smoked 5 packs of cigarettes a day. Because we love them, right? Forgiveness is that. This is why we should forgive, right? Because forgiveness helps bring us back to our heart, which is always seeking to love and to feel love, to know that we are love. Any experience of pure presence, pure wisdom, and pure compassion is an experience of the truth of who you are, Satchitananda. And it brings you home to who you are, which is why it feels so beautiful to go into the feeling of yourself, feel a sensation, ask for the wisdom from it, and then get the wisdom that, oh, I'm here to teach the blank, 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 or I'm here to the blank, 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 or I'm here to show up, I'm here to let go, I'm here to accept, I'm here to... Because in that feeling, you feel yourself, your true self, your true nature. You have, as a friend of mine says, touched the hem of the holy. You have rooted into the ground of your own pure being. You have connected to your true self. And through any of our experiences, back to where we started in the beginning, any exalted experience, any addictive experience, any great, great, great real experience, we feel ourselves alive, wise, whole. And that's a feeling of Satchitananda. Satchitananda is just a Sanskrit word for it, but it can be anything, right? So the mind-blessing piece of karma is this. Hey, do you want to say that thought before? Yeah, go ahead and say that thought.
No, you go. I want to hear the mind blasting. I just have a question.
Yes.
Well, I don't want to mess up the thread you're on because it's all loving and pleasant, and I was about to stink it up.
Let's go there, because I was going to go there, too.
Okay. And I'm happy to use myself as an example. And I still think about, because you just did that exercise, I think about that day that I called you and I was like, you know, or that we had a phone meeting and I wanted to not meet because I was just like,
right.
I've never seen myself as a hot mess before in my life. And one of the things I was really struggling with was this idea that, you know, I wasn't able to use the compassion, all that lovely, flowery, Satchitananda stuff to come full circle with really, like, I couldn't. There was someone I needed to forgive, but I couldn't forgive them and also continue to be friends with them and be in their presence. I felt like I could only forgive them if I, like, really never interacted with them again. And I was struggling with this idea because I had never done this before. I've never in my life, you know, just kind of cut someone out or blocked them on social media. I didn't even know how. I had to Google how to block people on social media. Like, I am so lacking that element of my, you know, and my family never really did stuff like that either. And, you know, I'm still sometimes, I mean, I'm not, like, my life has definitely improved since resolving to just do that. But I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I can't help but get those thoughts, like, am I an asshole? You know what I mean? Like, or guilt myself for not being, you know, Satchitananda enough to deal with someone's shit. Ananda.
But do you remember how that resolved that day?
I remember that I was, like, breathing again and I felt way better. And I definitely was carrying, like, boulders in my gut and they were gone when I gave myself permission to do what felt like the best thing.
Which was?
Go forward and create the, you know, the illusion of separation and stick with it.
Right.
Stay with it, and yeah, it's greatly improved my life. I have a hard time reconciling that because it feels like there's something selfish or passionate about it. And I have a feeling I know what you're going to say, but I also feel like there's probably friends here who could benefit from hearing it too.
Okay, so what am I going to say?
Well, I mean, I don't want to say it. I'll just say it.
Well, I want you to say it.
I don't know, you of course put it back to me how I, you know. would you do if it were me? And I was like, I'm telling me to take a nap. And I did basically take the best nap of my life, and then I woke up and I blocked someone on social media.
Right. So, insomma.
Yeah. You say it.
Yeah. So Lindsay had an experience where, as you just said, she couldn't forgive herself and go forward unless she blocked the person. And that was her struggle. That's karma. So I want to say all these pleasant words are just words. It's true. That's why we're going to keep doing these exercises, because that's all that matters. Who cares if we call it Satchitananda? But still, it's nice. It's nice to remember that's what we are. And if we can throw those words up or put them on neon lights or write them on the mirror in your bathroom, it's nice to remember that that's who you are. And that the who that you are, the Satchitananda that you are, has the capacity to go into the sensation, feel it fully, and then get wisdom from it. And that's all we really need to know. In other words, all the karmas of our lives, we are still bigger and greater than they. And inside those karmas, all the karmas of our lives, is the wisdom of who we are and why we're alive. So, in this situation, because nobody in her family ever blocks people on Facebook, the karma was, what do I do with that? How do I become a person who takes care of myself? Now, I knew that this person wasn't good for her, but if I said it, she still wouldn't have known for sure from herself. So we went in and we did the exercise, and she got from her own inner wisdom, she got the resolution that it's okay for her to take care of herself before taking care of this other person. Because the whole time you're thinking, I can't block that person, you're just thinking about the other person's feelings. And now you're taking care of that person's feelings, who probably doesn't even care. Yeah, that was part of the problem. And so the direction was, let's go back to what you're feeling and do what's right for you. And then she had the best nap of her life because she felt pleasant and calm. Yeah. So that is an exercise that we're going to do this afternoon, a forgiveness exercise. Thank you, Sophie. Okay, I'm going to drop this little piece on karma, and then I think we'll take a break, okay? Do you remember the little rose quartz that went around? Is it back up here? There's a piece of rose quartz somewhere. Yeah. So let's just hold that up for everyone to see. And it's shaped a little bit like the Indian flint stones. You know, the Native Americans they'd take rock, they'd find a piece like that, and then they'd use it to carve, maybe to break. So a couple years ago, I was in India, and I was about to go teach a class on Hanuman Namaskar. And so the whole class was about Hanuman as the great devotee. So Hanuman's Hanuman because his face, you can see, looks like the heart. Hanuman represents the heart. And Ram is the governing intelligence, and Sita is the blood that flows, the life force. And Hanuman basically brings Ram and Sita back together. And he's the son of Vayu, the god of wind, and Anjali, the mother of devotion. So he represents awareness on the breath, reunites our divine intelligence with our divine life and flow. Right? You can see he's the heart. So everything, all the yogic stories and literature have a relationship to who you actually are anatomically and psychologically. And so I was going to be teaching on this. And I had this thing that I had felt at Christmas time of that year, so 2 months earlier, I just woke up one day and felt like, I need to wear a crystal. just quartz crystal. I don't know why I woke up and said that. And the next day, a friend of mine gave me that for Christmas. And so I put it on a chain. And now I'm in India 2 months later. And I go to put that on, and it falls and breaks. And it breaks into a bunch of million pieces. Smaller than this, but like that. Really jagged, edged pieces. And I don't know, in a minute I had this insight, like, what if that was like the Big Bang? So I'm going to give you a theory. But I also want to remind you that the Big Bang itself is a theory. So this might be just as valid a theory. What if that Big Bang, that initial sound vibration, that in the beginning was the word, was ah, oh, mmm, ah, like God's heart broke. In that moment, I saw God as Ganga. Ganga is said to be a princess who lived in heaven, and she saw all the suffering of the world. And as a princess, she said, I have to go to the world. I know I can save them. I know I can help those people who are suffering. And her father, the king in heaven, said, you can't go there. You're a great princess. If you go to the world, your power is too great. You'll flood the earth. You'll flood the people. They'll drown. But she insists, I have to go. I know I can help. Her compassion's so great. I'm going. And she gets ready to jump out of heaven. And so they're like, well, if we can't stop her, we're going to figure out what we're going to do. So Shiva offers to come and receive her. Now, Shiva has all these dreadlocks. So he says, I'll catch her in my head, and the dreadlocks will help to direct her waters, to slow it down so she doesn't drown. So it's really beautiful, because you've got this idea of the Himalayas, which is where Shiva is said to have meditated. And then Ganges, if you're anywhere looking up, you can see Ganga, but you can't see her source because she comes from so high up in the Ganges. So it actually looks, and these mountains are so high that they look like they do touch heaven. And oftentimes, if there's a cloud, the cloud comes down around the peaks, and it really looks like a picture of heaven and earth touching. Heaven and earth touches up there. And then Ganga flows from up there. So she flows as if from heaven. And then she's said to be all rivers. She's said to be the symbol of all rivers everywhere. And what do rivers bring us? Right? People in ancient times lived along rivers. People still live along rivers, right? Some 450 million people drink water from the Ganges, rely on her. That's just her. That's just the Ganges. There's all kinds of rivers everywhere, right? So she gives us, she quenches our thirst. She hydrates. We do our laundry there, right? People fertilize their fields. They grow food and medicine, and they take food to the markets and grow wealth. And from wealth, they grow civilizations and cultures. It's the source. Water is the source. And it's comforting and it's refreshing. And I thought, what if that's the beginning? What if that's the origin story of our place here where we live? Call it what we will, earth, world, universe. What if it's a heart that broke with so much compassion, and in that breaking becomes all these shards of quartz and diamond and semi-precious stones that do what? They reflect light. What if all of us are pieces of light, broken, like God's heart broke and then sent all these millions of pieces, and that's what we all are, seeking to come back into the one. Like we're light, right? We're fragments, we're shards of the one heart. And all we want is to come back and reunite in the one heart, one to the other. To me, it gave me a sense of why we're alive, what it means to be alive, why it hurts to be alive. Like we're part of consciousness that goes blah and bursts into it, like burst into a universe, burst into something, right? Because before there was anything, there was nothing. But, you know, it's so cool you guys know about how they think that there might have been other universes and one, like, ripped and then caused, you know. It's, the more we look at, like, astrophysics, it kind of looks like that. Multiple universes, one, something might have ripped or broken or exploded. And what's exploded but the heart of existence, the seed that is going to bring things alive and has intelligence and was one and knows how to bring things alive in a connection and a perfect pattern. Therefore, karma then is we're alive because of karma. We're built alive because something broke. We're alive because there is a hole in another universe that lets something come through into this one or expand into this one. Or there's a balloon. We are alive because of karma. Karma predates us. And so when we say in your past life you must have done such and such a thing to create such and such a thing, maybe the consciousness that we all are did something. And we've come alive in this life to refine or to heal or to mend or to restore that thing. Like maybe you're alive as like a bodhisattva because you and only you can heal that thing, that brokenness. You and only you can heal that specific brokenness. And so, the consciousness that you are had to bring you to your knees. Otherwise, you wouldn't pay attention. The thing that would bring you to your knees, losing a child, losing a relationship, losing a job, losing face, whatever it is, for each of us, it's going to be something different. But that thing that would bring you to your knees, it is partly your dharma, but it's your karma. Either it happens over and over, or it happens one big explosion. Everything in your life goes up, and there's nothing left. It's that thing. It's that thing that happens when you will not get out of bed the next day. You can't. No matter who you were the day before. Now, I can't get up. I don't know how to face life. I don't even feel... Like, you're punched in the stomach, you don't even have a breath left. To me, that's your true karma. And you didn't do anything wrong, and you didn't do anything to cause it. I don't believe that. If there's anything there that you did, if at all, it's that you decided, you chose, you're going to come alive and experience that, because that would be your greatest growth, and that would be your greatest learning. And why come alive otherwise? Gives me chills. How's it sound to you? How does it land? It gives me chills when I think about what our real karma is. And I think it's like so far past blame or why or explaining. It's the thing we're never going to be able to understand why it happened. There's no explanation. That's why I say you can't get out of bed. You can't wake up tomorrow and fix it. It's that thing. And again, what happened to me, somebody else would be like, oh, who cares? If that happened to me, no big deal. Or if that happened to me, I'd be able to fix it. But not me. And the same thing with you, or you, or you. What happened to you that was the thing that brought you to your knees? You know, like Lindsay talks about, crying, snotty, like a child, brought her to her knees. And partly, if I may say so, because it's not the first time it happened. And this time it happened, it was like, God dang it, what? There was something for her to learn. There was a massive amount of growth in that. And the only way it was going to happen is if it broke her to pieces first. Because otherwise we're too comfortable. We got it figured out. We're trying to do it here. Why do we keep going back to Ganesha? Why do I keep using Ganesha as a mantra? Because Ganesha's karma. Ganesha... Saturn looked at, so this is, goes back to Jewish, but it's a great story, really quickly before we break. Saturn is the planet that delivers karma. And Saturn has just moved from Scorpio to Sagittarius. And in Scorpio, we spent 3 years, the whole world, getting slayed. Because Saturn doesn't do well in Scorpio. He gets really angry and he lashes out. But in Sagittarius, Saturn's going to be asking people to dig deep because he's the farmer, so he digs. And he turns the soil, and he does one thing in one season, and he waits 2 or 3 more seasons before that thing grows. So he teaches patience, and he teaches to work hard and wait for the reward, delayed gratification. He teaches responsibility, maturity, and what he's going to be teaching us now is about Sagittarian things, which is dharma, What is your true purpose? So we're all going to be going through this now. We're all going to be looking and examining and wondering, why am I alive? What is my essence? What are my gifts? What can I bring forth? How do I align? How do I live authentically? How is everything that I do? A teacher of mine used to say, your dharma is the thing that you do, not just when you go to work and you do it for 4 hours or 8 hours a day, Monday through Friday. Your dharma is what you do when you're working out at the gym, when you're cooking dinner, when you're on the phone with your mom, when you're mad, when you're sad, when you're grief. Dharma is the essence of who you are, and it's when you're so rooted into your own essence that you're doing it all the time. So if your dharma is love, because the root and the essence of who you are is love, you're loving all the time. Right? That's your dharma. That's what dharma really is. And then, how do we live a life that's so aligned with that, that we can do it all the time? But that's tomorrow's talk. The karma is all the things that yank us off that. We get so pulled off that it's like, God, my dharma's love. I've been loving all the time. I love, 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 love. I'm just loving massive. I have a massive heart of love. Everyone I see and meet, I love. But I just get that ripped out of me. Over and over, it's ripped away. Nobody sees it. No one appreciates it, you know. Or something else. It might be something else. Might be something else. Does that make sense? So that's why I really, 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 really want everyone to get this. Like, it's not just that we do it, it's that we receive it. We are on the receiving end of, oh, it's your karma. Right? And by the way, karma is good, it's positive and it's negative. It doesn't just mean the negative things. So then we go around saying, oh, it's my karma, just about negative things. But it might be your karma to, so, okay, I have a friend who at the age of 35, her father died and she inherited a lot of money. There's some karma there. That's karma. So she can go, wow, whippee, look at my karma. And it is karma because in that she's got a lot to learn. It's brought a lot of growth. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to do some exercises where we're going to really try to hone in on what that karma is in your life. Now, karma is not like dharma. Dharma is an essence. It's an absolute. It goes with you throughout your life. It might shift. You might say, well, for the first 20 years, I'm love, and I'm in service to love, but the next 20 years, creativity. But it's some of the expressions of the Satchitananda that is the source of all it is. Whereas karma can be something that you've just been living with now. That's what we're going to look at. What is it now? And we're going to look at it so that we can develop tools for handling it, and then tools for going forward when a new karma shows up. Because as long as we're alive, we're given to the space-time continuum, and you give anything to the space-time continuum, karmas flow as dharmas unfold. Okay? That's just what it is to be alive. That's true for the most enlightened masters. And in Jyotish, we call that Saturn, Rahu, and Ketu. Rahu and Ketu are the eclipses. And no matter how enlightened you are, at a certain point, an eclipse is going to come and block out the sun, or block out the moon. The great luminaries in the sky are going to go dark. And that's what it is to be alive in this place. Rahu and Ketu, that's called in Sanskrit. It's a beautiful concept that no matter how enlightened we become, we're still alive in this field, right? And there still will be eclipses in our life where everything goes dark and we cannot find the wall, let alone where the switch might be to turn the lights back on. Okay? So we'll take a break, and then we're going to come back and we can go to questions, and then we'll do some exercises. Thank you. I want to do, it'll be short, but we're going to do a little forgiveness practice. Because the other thing that we loop on has a lot to do with where we think we failed. And that's a karmic thing as well. So things happen in our life, it might be so-called karma, and we never resolve it because we're never able to really go to the place of mastery where we see that the soul chose that to happen. It happened on purpose. We're meant to learn something from it. And so we don't have to continue to be angry at the situation, the people, or even ourselves, right? So we're gonna do this. We're gonna inhale up, arms up. Interlace your fingers, turn your palms to the sky. Take a deep breath into your belly. Hold your breath. Exhale and bring your hands behind your head. Inhale, lift your chin, open your elbows wide, squeeze your shoulder blades together, hold your breath. And then exhale and curl into yourself, like bow in and curl, okay? I'll do that about 8 times, so keep doing that. Inhaling, you're coming up. Really open up your whole body, feel your ribs, side body, shoulders. Exhale, curl. As you breathe out, feel your spine, draw your navel to your back body. Let your breath flow as it will flow, and let your body follow the flow of your breath. The inhale begins and you lift. The exhale releases and you fold. So it's not your mind that's making your body work. It's your breath. Your breath begins the in-breath and you rise on that inhale. The exhale begins and you fold in on your exhale. And on the next in-breath, as you rise and open to life, I want to invite you to ask yourself, what do I need to forgive, or what am I ready to forgive? And as you exhale, you bow into yourself and just feel how that feels to ask yourself that question. And as you inhale, you ask it again, what am I ready to forgive, or what do I need to forgive? And you exhale and you just bow back into yourself, no need for an answer. Doesn't matter if an answer comes or doesn't. Just notice what it feels like to ask that question. So let's do that 3 more times. What am I ready to forgive? What do I need to forgive? And bowing in and just noticing the sensations in your body, noticing what arises. 2 more of those. And then just this last one. No hurry, just at your own pace. At the top of your breath, hold it. Feel your body. What do I need to forgive? Feel your heart. And then as you exhale and fold, bow into yourself. And then let your arms, your hands drop and fold over your legs. Give yourself a nice big forward fold. Bowing your head, softening your neck. Breathing here into your back body. Notice what you feel, notice your thoughts, notice sensations. Notice your response to the sensations. Notice what you're thinking, and then ask yourself, can I forgive myself for having that thought I just had? That thought I just had, especially if it was a negative one. And as you fold here, and breathing into your back body, ask yourself, can I make more room for myself with my next inhale? Can I make more room for my soul, my spirit, myself, my true self on my next in-breath? And as I exhale, can I release everything that holds me back and release totally and completely into my true nature? And then inhale, rise up, lift your arms up overhead, deep full breath. With your eyes closed, hold your breath. Imagine there's a column of light from the top of the sky down through the crown of your head and to the ground beneath you. Exhale. Inhale, reach up, hold that column of light. You're holding it in your hands. And as you exhale, bring that light to your brain and to your heart and to your whole body. And then inhale up again. And you're going to exhale, and you're going to twist to the left. So you can take your left hand to the back of your chair and your right hand to your left outer left leg. Good. Pull into the twist. Breathe in, lengthen your spine. Exhale, go deeper into the twist. 1 more time. Good. Coming back forward, arms up to the sky, deep in-breath. And exhale to the other side. Right hand comes to the back of the chair, left hand to your right leg. Deep inhale, lengthening your spine. Deep exhale, deepening into the twist. Good. Inhale back forward. This time exhale your hands behind you and interlace your fingers behind you. Straighten your elbows, squeeze your shoulder blades together. Lift, close your eyes, lift your heart center. Deep breath. Am I ready to forgive? Am I ready to make more space for my soul, my spirit, my life, my truth, my true nature? And am I ready to release the judgments and the limited way I see? Am I ready to forgive myself for forgetting who I am, that I am light, life, and love? And am I ready to step forward and to be life, light, and love all the time, even when I am the most challenged? Good, and then release your hands, keep your eyes closed. Just find a comfortable seated position. Fold your hands. One hand comes on top of your heart, and the other hand on top of the first hand, so you're holding your heart center. Picturing the center of your heart as light or pink rose quartz crystal or a blossoming lotus, whatever feels beautiful and good, and holding the beauty of you, ask yourself, am I willing now to forgive? All the times I didn't protect this beautiful self that I am. All the times I doubted the truth of who I am. And if the answer is yes, then do that now. Say to yourself, I forgive you. And I love you. And I am always with you. From this day forward, I vow to always remember and never forget. Om Namah Shivaya, Jai Maguru, Jai Shri Ganesh, Ganesha Sharanam. Remember your light. Thank you. Namaste. Thank you.